This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. While it might have been a more accepted practice in the past, spanking children can be a controversial topic nowadays. Some parents think it's appropriate, and others are choosing to forego it in favor of other disciplinary methods. Joining us now, pediatric psychologist at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and assistant professor in the University of Cincinnati Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Catherine Younger, social worker at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Julie Smith-Sway, and developmental pediatrician in the Division of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Dr. Jennifer Earhart. And Jennifer, Kate, and Julie, thank you so much for coming in today. We appreciate it. And you can join us as well, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Jennifer, how much these days do people still support the idea of spanking kids?
I think it varies, but clinically, we still see families that come in and say that of all the different strategies they've tried, spanking is one of them. Interestingly, I think that sometimes families come in and they've already come to the conclusion on their own that I've tried spanking and it doesn't work. Whereas other families come in and may say they've tried spanking and indicate that it's a strategy they would use again. So I think there's variability in terms of who's still using it and their thoughts on it.
You know, surveys show a lot of U.S. parents still approve of spanking, and there have been several court cases as well that upheld a parent's right to spank. So why – it still seems like people view it as an appropriate form of discipline. I'm just wondering why there's a disconnect between what the public – how the public perceives it and how research perceives it, because research is saying not such a good idea.
Well, I think for these families, it's normative in some respects. By that, I mean that as a child, a parent or caregiver may have spanked them, and their interpretation of that is that there wasn't a negative effect on their emotional or behavioral development. And so, you know, their perception is that if I spank my child, it will be effective and it won't have a negative impact on them.
I was also going to say that those are great points, and one of the things that's been really confusing is that there have been hundreds of studies on spanking, and while the body of literature is getting more consistent, I think from a research perspective, there have been some of these confusing questions that have come out of the body of research, and why the recent meta-analysis that was done has been really helpful in trying to clarify maybe some of the confusing findings that have been discovered.
Now, what's the research saying for the most part, Kate?
So the research at this point is really showing that, by and large, spanking, which we should probably define spanking as an open hand hitting the child on the buttocks or on the extremities, really is associated with increased risk for detrimental outcomes in lots of different ways, both in childhood and in adulthood.
So can it lead to things like mental health issues, substance abuse, those types of things in the future? Is that what the research is saying?
It is showing that kids who are spanked are at increased risk for those things. So that's one of the things to be clear about, is that in order to say spanking causes different outcomes, what we really have to do is, in a way, kind of choose which kids were going to get spanked and which kids weren't. And of course, that's not an ethical thing to do. But what we can say is that among kids who are spanked, if you look at how they do over time, there seem to be more difficulties in aggressive behavior, hyperactivity, depression, anxiety, other kind of mental health concerns, learning concerns. And so there seem to be associations between spanking or physical forms of punishment and these more deleterious outcomes over time.
Julie, what's been your experience as far as spanking in terms of the parents and their attitudes toward it?
I think just like everyone else has experienced, I feel like parents have tried it. Some of them feel like it works, and some of them don't. And I think that it's important for us as clinicians to assess where they're at with that motivation for change, so that's when we can kind of try to help educate them and show them different ways that might be more beneficial than spanking. I think lots of parents see an immediate response and compliance with spanking. And that is...
So it gets them quick results.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, mm-hmm. Even though in the bigger picture, it's not really serving the large purpose of compliance and getting really what they want them to learn.
So can it actually have the opposite effect, Julie, that you spank the kid thinking, I'm going to get their attention and make them change their behavior, but instead the kid goes off and just keeps doing what you don't want him to do in the first place?
Absolutely. That can absolutely happen. I think that's what starts to get parents to think like, oh, well, maybe there's a better way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's not uncommon for parents to say that, you know, I spanked and 2 minutes later they had another tantrum, you know, or I spanked and the next day they were hitting me and I worry that now they're copying me. So I think parents do kind of pick up on that it's not the most effective way of reducing those challenging behaviors.
Mm-hmm. So what can a parent do? What are some effective ways of disciplining that each of you would suggest?
Sure.
Kate?
Yeah. So whenever I think about discipline, I always think it's really important to focus more on how we really try to encourage positive behaviors and focus more on giving positive attention and reinforcing and teaching kids and really showing them more helpful alternatives to getting their needs met than it is to punish kind of any time or any type of misbehavior. So things that I think about are always catching the child being good. So if there's a particular behavior that your child is struggling with, for instance, being defiant, what you're trying to do is go out of your way as much as you can to catch that child being good and really show them, I'm so proud of you. You are such a good first-time listener. You can, you know, give them a high five. They could earn some rewards in some cases. So you're really showing them that it pays to do those other things. And in general with behavior management, in just telling kids not to do something, it's not as helpful as telling them what to do instead and then going out of your way to reinforce that behavior.
So spanking is a negative reinforcement, and you're talking about positive reinforcement here?
Exactly.
Okay. Is there a drawback to positive reinforcement, though, that the child at some point expects that every time they do something good, they're going to get something in return? I always wonder about that.
Yeah, and that is a common concern that parents bring up, or sometimes they'll say, well, why should I reward a child for doing something that they should be doing anyway? And the way I kind of think about it is, you can even think about it with your partner or when you're at work. It feels good to be told that you're doing a good job, and it makes us want to do it again. I think especially the younger children, a lot of times it's more helpful to provide external rewards. And by doing that, you're really motivating them to practice the better behaviors. And then over time, they kind of internalize it, and then it builds its own momentum.
And I'll confess, my mother was a master at this when I was a kid. This was her tactic, and she used it very well.
I think also not all rewards have to be tangible.
That's right. I think for those of us that work with young kids,
one of the things that we'll tell families is one of the most motivating rewards is special time with the parents, especially if there's multiple siblings in the household. Mm-hmm. One of the best rewards is I get 20 minutes of undivided attention from mom to play my favorite game. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't always have to be a tangible. I think the other thing that, Dr. Unger is really getting at is that part of what we want to do is build that positive relationship between the parent and child. And that's really the goal of the type of strategies that she's talking about. And if you think about it, if all the interactions between a parent and child are negative, the child is tantruming and throwing things, the parent is finding themselves yelling or trying spanking, that's stressful for both parties. It's stressful for child and stressful for parent. And so a lot of what we're trying to do is really also build, those positive interactions between parent and child, because that's what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm. Julie, what are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts were exactly what you were just about to say. It doesn't have to be tangible. With kids, respond so wonderfully to hugs and attention and just time. And I think that parents really want to do that. I think sometimes they get, they struggle with how much time do I really have to do this. It doesn't really have to be a lot of time in order to continue to motivate the types of behavior that you're looking at. And I feel like sometimes we need to talk about what types of behavior we're talking about. It's not everything. You can't reward or even verbally praise every single behavior. There are some expectations, but if you pick one or two that continually are happening in your home, such as hitting your sibling, or not hitting your sibling in this case, what we're talking about, if you just take one, it's more doable. It doesn't feel as overwhelming. I mean, we're all parents of children, pretty small. So, we understand the demands of multiple children in the home, of parenting children who, are kicking the dog and, things that really happen. Like, so I feel like we're not trying to give out, you know, like advice that we haven't used in our own homes. I've used these things that you're talking about, and they work so well.
Well, you're talking about being time consuming, but I can see a point where if you keep doing this often enough, they'll reach a point where
you don't have to do it anymore. You can do something else, or you can just play Uno because that's what you want to do and it's fun, you know, with your kid.
I think if kids perceive the relationship with a parent or caregiver as positive, they're more likely to be compliant.
Absolutely.
They're more likely to be compliant with directions or demands put on them if the basis is really a positive relationship.
Yeah. Jennifer, what about besides spanking, what are some other forms of negative punishment that people should try to avoid?
Well, I think that, you know, spanking is definitely the largest one. I think, you know, a lot of what I see is, so I work with children that have developmental delays or have developmental disabilities such as autism. So, you know, a lot of what the conversation I have with families is about expectations, you know, kind of matching expectations of what the child can and cannot do behaviorally with where they are developmentally. And what strategies work. So, you know, for example, taking things away isn't going to be very effective for a child if developmentally they're functioning around a 2-year-old level. It's not actually going to change the behavior that the parent is looking to do. So, you know, I think that really what we focus on also is kind of, you know, connecting where that child is developmentally to what are the appropriate, you know, strategies.
Yeah. What about sitting in the corner?
Oh, so I think that, you know, if that is in the context of timeout,
okay.
I think, you know, timeout is an effective strategy for, you know, very specific behaviors, especially things like hitting, throwing. It can be used very well. Now, I would say kind of social deprivation, for lack of a better word, where basically you're isolating the kid, you know, for a long period of time. You're going to be in the corner for half an hour. You're going to be in your room alone, you know, for half an hour. That's not going to be effective. But, you know, if that, you know, time away is in the context of a strategy like timeout, you know, potentially could be effective.
I think you have to understand the purpose of timeout, too.
Yeah.
So, like, the purpose of timeout is not a punishment, so to speak. It's to take a moment, use your coping mechanisms to calm down, which a parent can be right there helping them do. It's not isolating a child. It's helping them understand that when their mood is out of control and they're not feeling in control, that they have a safe place that they can go and kind of regain and get back to where they were so that they can engage in the play.
But it sounds go ahead, Kate.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think there are kind of two different ways that a sort of break from what's going on can be helpful. In one case, what Julie is talking about, when kids are starting to lose control or starting to have really big emotions and might be heading down a path of not handling them in a very helpful way, getting that child out of the situation when you as a parent start noticing that their emotions are getting big and helping them to calm down, to take some deep breaths, to get themselves under control, and then to talk through what's going on so that you can help them become better problem solvers and get out that tension, frustration verbally is very helpful. And you can model that as a parent too. When you're feeling really stressed out, you can say, you know, I need to go take a break and take some deep breaths, and then we'll come back and talk about this when I'm feeling more calm. The other way that you can use time out, especially in younger children, is more kind of after that misbehavior has happened, like you've been hitting or you're not listening, then briefly removing the child for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes and limiting the attention to them during that time can be very helpful. And essentially what it's doing is it's a timeout from positive attention. So what we're trying to do is make being in the world, being around your family, a very positive experience in general by, again, focusing on all those good behaviors so that when you separate them and you're not giving them that positive attention, that's really the consequence that they're experiencing and they want to rejoin that.
So combine timeouts with positive reinforcement, use the two things together?
And use actually positive reinforcement 5 times as much as you're using timeout. It is far more important to focus on the good behaviors than to punish the bad behaviors. And that's true across any type of punishment when you look at the research.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up talking too, because my oldest son, he's now 30 years old, just admitted something to me that the thing that he hated the most was when I would catch him doing something wrong, we'd have these long talks. And he said, that got through to me. That not only did it drive me crazy, but it got through to me because you'd lecture me about, you know, well, this is not appropriate behavior. I expect better from you. And it was funny after all those years that he finally came out and said, you know, talking to me worked.
Right. And you have to know the child. For some children, I say, and I didn't come up with this. I love it, though. It's
he
act, paid
attention
don't yak.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was paying attention. That's why he didn't.
Right. So some kids, the lecturing and just kind of talking through it is helpful. For other kids, you get three words out and they are just not listening anymore. And so then you're using more of taking them out of the situation or taking away privileges. I think it's really important, too, to really highlight the role of attention, that can work to increase the behaviors you want to see more of. But attention can actually make misbehaviors worse, too. And that's so important to think about with parents, that for kids, they prefer positive attention. But really, for kids, any media is good media. And especially if there's a lot going on, the things like interrupting, whining, starting to fight with your siblings is actually a pretty good way to start getting some one-on-one attention from parents during times where they might be distracted or doing other things that they need to do. And kids learn that sometimes negative behavior actually can get the attention that they're seeking. So again, you're trying to catch the positive opposite behavior and give attention for those, and then limit the attention that you're giving to some of those negative behaviors like whining and interrupting.
Do you want to, Jennifer?
No, I was just going to piggyback on something that Dr. Younger said. I think that, you know, part of what we're also interested in doing is understanding what the function of the behavior is. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of parents will say, you know, my child had a tantrum. I just don't know why he's upset and tantruming. And it isn't always obvious on the surface, but most negative behaviors, you know, whether it's, whining and interrupting, whether it's tantruming, you know, whether it's hitting, they're serving some purpose or function for the child. Maybe they want to escape a situation that's uncomfortable or stressful for them. They want the attention of a parent. They're trying to get a tangible, you know, something they want in the kitchen or the toy room. And so understanding what function that behavior is serving can really help to modify that behavior, you know, so that you can know those triggers and in some respects avoid them or have a different response to them.
Do you adjust your discipline based on the age of the child? Is that an important key to this?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Kind of give me an example if you could.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Sure. So with younger children, I think that having more kind of top-down discipline is more important. So parents set the expectations. You're really kind of deciding the limits of the behavior. And the younger the child, the more important it is to provide a consequence right when the behavior is occurring. And consequence can be positive or negative. It just means what is going to happen after the behavior happens. And so little kids really need that immediate feedback about their behaviors right in the moment to really link those two in time and to understand I'm in timeout because I hit my brother, or my mom is saying I did a really great job being a good first-time listener because this is something that just happened. As kids get older, they have more ability to make choices about their behavior in the moment based on something that might happen a little bit farther off in time. So maybe with older school-age children, you can have more of weekly rewards or daily rewards or consequences that happen as they're able to think about a time frame in a different way. You also think about things like timeout. Timeout's very appropriate for kids. I mean, 2 to 6, that's a very common strategy and a very effective strategy if it's used in the right way. But you're not necessarily going to put an 11, 12 teenager in timeout. And at that point, you're talking more about earning or losing privileges, maybe cell phones, video games, access to friends.
So adjust with age.
I would also argue adjust with developmental level. You know, I give the example of a 5 or 6-year-old that, you know, perhaps is developmentally around a 2-year-old. If you do a sticker chart where they have to delay gratification, that is, they earn so many stickers and at the end of the week they get a reward, that's not going to be as motivating as an approach where you're connecting the behavior to the immediate reward, as Dr. Younger was describing.
And then I just wanted to piggyback on what you also, I think it's important, you mentioned it, Kate, to really know your child, the child that you are speaking about, because they may care less about their cell phone. Not likely, but, you know, they may not. That may not be where that factor of motivation is going to come from. So you have to figure out individually how these children are going to be motivated, and you don't want to go all or nothing. You want to, you know, the consequences need to meet, you know, where they're at, but they need to feel like they can earn it back, or they still have some choices. You know, they may not be able to see their friends, but they can walk around the house and visit with their siblings or whatever the case is. That, you know, you can't say you're grounded for the rest of your life. It's not doable. and it's not going to happen. So we have to be realistic in what these consequences are, especially the older kids get, because I feel like we get really frustrated sometimes as parents, and we just want to take it all away.
And so meantime, Kat, I guess the debate over spanking will continue for some time.
Yeah, it will. But I think really from an evidence-based standpoint, I think it's becoming more and more clear that there are just more positive strategies and that spanking is no better than and potentially has more consequences than other kind of effective forms of behavior management.
Well, Jennifer, Kate, and Julie, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank you.
Pediatric psychologist at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and assistant professor in the University of Cincinnati Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Catherine Younger, social worker at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Julie Smith-Swaycar, and developmental pediatrician in the Division of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Dr. Jennifer Earhart.